listening to Angoffa Arts, a podcast about reading
and writing
for people who love books.
This episode was recorded on Gadigal and Bidjigal lands of the Eora Nation.
Hello, book world, and welcome to the Angoffa Arts podcast. My name is Sarah Sasson. I'm a Sydney-based author, doctor, and researcher, and I'll be your host. Every week, we'll be chatting to local authors and other members of the literary community. So let's see who we'll be catching up with this week.
Letitia Davey is the manager and buyer at Glebe Books Dulwich Hill, an independent bookshop in Sydney's inner west. Prior to her current role, Letitia worked for New South Wales Police and has also been a director at the Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide.
Hello, Letitia Davies. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Sarah Sasson. Lovely to be speaking with you.
Thank you for making the time to join us today.
Oh, look, I was very honoured when you got in touch and asked me to be part of this. What a great project. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, super excited to be here. I thought maybe you'd been on other podcasts. I don't know. I don't really know what your life is like outside of the bookshop.
I have not. This is my podcast debut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I do get to do a lot of good things in the, outside of the store, a lot, but never a podcast. So this is a first. So thank you.
Well, excellent. Well, we'll have to make it a good one. So you normally manage the Glebe Books bookstore in Dulwich Hill. So are you in there every day, and who is holding the fort today?
Well, I work a 9-day fortnight. So I work a day a weekend, every second weekend, and then 4 days in the week. So, but we're open quite long hours. So essentially, and I have a fabulous team. You've probably met some of them, and they are holding the fort and they do it so beautifully. I've got a PhD student and a book editor and a librarian and a musician, and they're just such a fabulous team.
Mm. And your shop is kind of famous for being quite animal friendly. I think I first got to know you on social media, but that was my first impression. Like, oh, that's the shop that's always posting like dog pics and cat pics. How did that start?
That happened. That was a glorious accident. When I started in the store, which is about 3.5 years ago now, I found an old sandwich board out in the back room. And I thought, oh, you know, there's the, you know, the schoolgirl in all of us who wants to write on the board. I'm like, oh, chalk. I bought the chalk. I thought, what are we going to put on this sign? And so I wrote dogs welcome. and then one day we just added underneath it, cats also welcome, but good luck with that.
Yeah, well, you don't want to alienate the cat people,
right?
The cat people who read. Mm-hmm.
And so the community responded, Sarah. We have countless dogs in there all the time. But in that year where we first put the cats addition to the sign, I think we tallied 9 or 10 cat visits that year.
Have you had a cat on a leash? Do they come on the leash or freestyling or in the cage?
I've had one on a leash. And I think its name was Teddy.
I'm always super impressed by cats on leashes. Because no cat I ever had would agree to that.
My cat would not be happy at all. And I have a cat. And she doesn't like to leave the house for any reason. I even had a fabulous lady come by who really wanted to be on her Instagram with her cat. And I could tell, you know, she had a full face of makeup. She'd blow dried her hair and she had a cat in the carrier. And I said, are you coming, you know, to or from the vet? And she said, no. And that cat had been put in the carrier for the express purpose of coming to the bookstore, being photographed, and then being one of the visiting cats.
Well,
it sort of ran away then.
And it's still happening? It just is a regular thing now?
It's still happening. Mm. And we've had a parrot. We've had a lizard a couple of times, and we did have someone mention once wanting to come in with their goat.
They'll eat the books.
That's true. I await that day. I take the risk. I just love it. You know, and everything's content, Sarah, as you know.
Everything's good. I have to admit, when I came to do my book visit, I mean, I have a 16-year-old geriatric, beautiful cat, and I thought, oh. Should I bring the cat? And then I realized, no, it'd be more about me and less about the cat. She would not enjoy the road trip. So I let her be.
I'm
But I
glad
did think about it. I did think about
Yeah, I'm glad that you considered that. I love it.
it.
That's so good. And I mean, you know, Instagram, right? Like it's we love it, we hate it. It's all the things, right? It's a time suck. It's also an incredible way to find out what's happening and connect and things. For a bookstore, it's a pretty positive place though. And
I try and keep my gram positive. Were you on Twitter, the old year?
Yeah,
old
I was.
Mm.
Not anymore.
So I'm still kind of, yeah, I'm still kind of grieving the loss of the old Twitter, but I find, yeah, Instagram's kind of my social media of choice now, but now it's sort of had to fill that void.
I think for the bookstore, because when I started in the shop 3.5 years ago, I created an Instagram account, so it's still reasonably fresh, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I just continue to forge on that front technically. But what I found that people really love is the bird's eye view of a bookstore, and we don't do any sort of planned, polished content. It is all just we see something that we think is great,
spontaneous,
and we pull the phone out. It's like it's all very,
that's
very
how it should
unplanned.
Be.
Yeah. And I think people enjoy that. I mean, literally some of our footage is us opening a box and pulling out something great. But, it's nice. And some people have come in who have followed us that hadn't been in before. And they were like, oh, you know, I've sort of been following you and just sort of seeing the life of the bookstore. And they're interested in the people who work there and what everybody's reading. And
I think it's not, I think, yeah, my number one rule is, yeah, you have to keep it real, because I think the worst part of social media is when, you know, you're putting up false pretenses. But I think the nice thing about a bookshop is, you know, it's not just a transactional store. I think people enjoy seeing, yeah, behind the curtains of the book industry and seeing the authors come in and people holding their first books, or like the events that you put on. And yeah, you're part of a community of readers and writers. So
it's so true. There's always just something interesting happening, and that's where a bookstore is so strange, because it is a commercial space, right? It's retail, but it's so much more.
Yeah, it plays a much larger role.
Yeah.
So prior to becoming a bookseller, you've had quite an interesting career. Worked in state and federal government for the New South Wales Police and in a Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide. Mm. How have those roles informed, life as a bookseller and your reading life?
Oh, goodness.
Do you enjoy engaging in those worlds still?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I just most people, if they hear that I've worked at police, presume I might have been an officer, which I was not. I have a law background, so I worked in policy and the like in the police executive.
How did you come into bookselling from?
Yeah, well, I worked in books in my early 20s. I worked at DMX, and I just started doing, I was doing marketing and events while I was at uni, so part-time uni in the George Street store. And then just fell into a role where they sort of urgently needed someone to do some things up in the head office. And then I was 26 and the national communications manager for DMX.
Oh, wow.
No experience there. I went down, I remember going down to the mezzanine of the DMX store and finding a press releases for dummies book and taking it up to my desk and write the press release. Like, it was like that.
So I remember those books.
Yeah. So it was a baptism by fire. I learned so much. It was great. I was there for a couple of years, but then I had aspirations to do something with the law degree. And then I ended up working in government for a long time. Look, I'm a fiction reader almost exclusively, I must say.
Confessions. So yeah. no true crime then?
No, I actually give crime a wide berth. I'm not a great crime reader. I would like to be.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
I know. I can watch it.
You're a paradox.
I can watch the TV shows. But I become one of those awful pedant readers where I'll get a chapter in and I'll think, well, hang on, if there's two dead bodies, there's no way that's being investigated by one officer in a country town, the homicide squad, they move in a pack, they're becoming it. So I just,
you know, too much. So. Mm.
I become totally painful. And who needs that? I don't do it to other books. I don't do it to other books, but I get quite riled if I think that there hasn't been enough research into police methodology.
Yeah.
Because I think it's not too tricky to find these things out. So if a book says, about the person pressing charges. Well, that's it. I just closed the book because I thought that that's not how it works. So that's I've had to give I've given up on most crime.
Yep. Massively, yeah.
And it's funny, you know, now I think about it, when I was, particularly when I worked in the police commissioner's office, I mean, that's a really interesting place to work. It's also can be stressful and political and a lot goes on and you can be the front page news. And I worked in quite intense jobs in that environment. And I found that the higher the work stress was, the more I was reading. So I really had some great years where I was reading a lot of novels. And I know for some people it goes the other way. You know, when I know I speak to a lot of people, when they feel overwhelmed and stressed, they find it hard to concentrate on a book. But for me, I find the more I've got going on in my life that's tricky, the more I want to dive into books. So yeah,
so it's definitely that, like escapism, pressure release, kind of.
Yes.
So you gravitate towards fiction. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But also the cool thing about your previous roles is, I guess, you're really dealing with the grittiness of life as well. You know, there's real stories there of, you know, whether it's, you know, crime or veterans affairs. Yeah, like these are like extremes of human existence. And a lot of, you know, and even a lot of fiction deals with some of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose if my working life prior to this time inform my reading at all, I suppose it's just that ongoing interest in the human condition, and literature is where that is, I think, explored most interestingly and compellingly. What I do find is sometimes there'll be books that come out, both fiction and nonfiction, or nonfiction, not necessarily true crime, but, you know, books that look into particularly women's experiences and the incidence of abuse and violence and that. And I do steer clear of that. Which I don't know, that it's either not wishing to be re-traumatized, or it might also be because I don't need any convincing about the presence of that. I know. I know only too well the harm we do to each other. And so I don't, I often have customers put a book down and I go, can you believe this? And I think, absolutely, I can believe it.
Yeah. Well, you've
and
seen.
So I don't need to
tested
read.
That information in another way. You've seen it firsthand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's similar. I'm just trying to think. Yeah. Parallels with medicine
as
well. I mean, I do love some medical themes in fiction and poetry. But I guess the equivalent for me. Yeah, I don't need to read like a. Yeah. I mean, I've been in a couple like writing forums and groups, and some of the most beautiful moments have been just exactly like that. I have a friend or a family member going through this. Is there any is there any books you would recommend either for the parent or the child or the person? And just isn't that amazing, like when someone's going through something hard or difficult to reach out, and it's a way of connecting to other people who've been through that thing and giving them some hope or something to hold on to, or a way forward.
People are brave when they come up to the counter and ask a question. I've had people ask for books on addiction. I've had teenagers ask for books on particular things that they're confronting. I had an elderly man come in once, and he'd lost his wife, and she'd always shooed him out of the kitchen throughout their marriage, and he had no idea how to cook anything beyond a boiled egg. And we were looking for it, and he said, might you have a basic cookbook? And a basic cookbook is quite hard to find because cookbooks are so fancy. But that was a lesson for me as a book buyer, because I always have a basic cookbook or something now because of that experience. But, I mean, it takes a lot to walk up to a stranger and say, this
tell
is
them what's going on.
I think I really underappreciated how people go to books for answers.
It's not just light entertainment. It's
it's
something.
And
direction.
And then as a independent bookshop, you really want, and so when you're really connected with the community like that, you want to be able to say, yes, I have something. So as a book buyer, then you always get your ear to the ground, because when someone asks you for something and they're brave enough to do so and then you don't have it, it is a sad
day. You don't want that moment.
You think, you know, we can always order something in, but we try to build up all those little niche things in the range now over time. Yeah, because I think it takes a lot for people to do that. It's extraordinary.
And so growing up as a child and a teenager, were you always an avid reader? Did you have piles of books in your room?
Yes, I was an avid reader. I don't really come from a family of readers, though, Sarah. And a lot of people who are bookheads like me, you know, grew up with everyone around them reading. I mean, I was always encouraged to read, and I would have books bought for me and be taken. Max L's in Roselands was my bookstore, Roselands Shopping Centre, and then Campsie Library. Dad would sometimes take me there at night and, you know, leave you to look around. And
at night? Oh, they're open late, were they? And
yeah, like they had like a night. You remember those old library books where they would be, they were like a large hardcover in plastic. You might be younger than me, so, but there were library editions of books. So it wasn't like now, I think they're just the same as you would find in the bookstore. But back then they would have, like, say you borrowed Matilda, it would be this sort of big oversized hardcover library edition. It was so great. Anyway, so yeah, I was, yes, as an avid reader, and all of the things that of my generation, the Babysitter's Club, Sweet Valley High. I mean, this is not high art, but they these series made.
I read Sweet Valley High. I'm pretty sure it was like the same plot every book. Like, I can't remember, you know, someone was upset, someone was jealous.
It was the vibe. Elizabeth, Jessica, Bruce Patman, Todd. It was the vibe. But the
Judy Blume. Tell me you read Judy Blume. Oh, come on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obsessed.
Forever?
Thank
Forever.
You. Yeah, absolutely. Forever. Okay, when I started working at Glee Books Dulwich Hill, one of the first things I did was go on to online at the, looking at what books were available.
Just and, ticked
and
all the Judy Blumes.
All the Judy Blumes that we didn't have. And I remember there was one, it looked like there was one copy left in the warehouse of Forever Judy Blume. And I could not hit that enter key button. And I have been keeping it in stock ever since. So yeah, the Judy Blumes I loved, and thankfully I went to public schools, so they weren't banned. And, you know, because I know some kids, I had friends in Catholic schools, and once the librarians realized how many children were borrowing them and the frequency, and they just flop open onto the as fabulous pages.
Yeah, right? They're all grubby.
But then they would get removed from the shelf, or you had to be an older reader. But thank God, public school librarians, and there's no rules about the borrowing.
But she really took on the big issues. Like, that's what I find amazing, both for adult and young adult writers. Mm. Like, she boldly went where other people feared to go. And she informed whole generations of
Absolutely.
Young people.
Absolutely. Mm. I've read an interview, and you may have heard this too, where I think she had when she wrote Forever, and for anyone who hasn't read Forever, it's a teenage relationship in which they do it
for the first time. It's about
they do it for the first time.
First sexual experience,
absolutely,
in a heterosexual world.
Yes, yes. And if I'm remembering this interview correctly, Judy Blume said that it was her daughter who encouraged her to write this book, and had said something to her mother along the lines of, "Could you write a book where they do it?" And there is no catastrophe that follows. You know, nobody has an unwanted pregnancy to deal with. Nobody's parents bust them halfway and you know, banish them to a boarding school. Like, nothing.
Yeah. They don't live happily ever after either.
No. It's just sort of like, it's okay. It's sort of good and underwhelming, and, you know, it's just sort of, oh, all right.
So that
was the challenge, apparently, that her daughter set for her, and then she wrote Forever.
I think she cracked open a whole new genre of writing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Sarah. I mean, the amount of books that are now published for teens and young adults, it's a huge market, but I don't think that existed for my generation. Beyond the Judy Blumes, I can't think of much, which meant that we just started reading adult pulp books at a really early age. That's certainly what I did, and a lot of my friends. You know, you start reading vampire and Anne Rice novels and Virginia Andrews, that Flowers in the Attic, yeah, sweeping family dramas. And now you look back at the themes in those books that you were reading. I remember reading Colleen McCulloch's The Thornbirds when I was 13.
Okay.
I mean, it's wild. But that is the joy of living, because I was not in a household of readers. Nobody ever edited what I read, because they hadn't read it first. So I got away with a lot.
I was in a house of readers where reading was encouraged. I think one of the best things my parents did was, they never censored us, and they let us read what
we wanted. And everyone was kind of always doing their own thing. Like my dad liked to read, yeah, nonfiction. He liked reading history. My mum would always have a snoop around what we borrowed from the library. But there was, yeah, we were allowed all those books in the house. Yeah. And
that time in reading, I mean, that just stays with you. I mean,
formative.
You wonder, will you ever hold another author in the esteem that you hold Judy Blume? Possibly not.
Or Anne M. Martin. I remember
Anne M. Martin.
Babysitters was, yeah, it was trailblazing and still has dated quite well, I think. It's been interesting watching some of these things come back for a second revival, like they've sort of reinvented the new editions of the Babysitters Club. But this core tenets hold. I remember loving reading and yet up until at least late primary school, you know, all the texts at school were so sanitized, you know, and they're all very like cheery and happy. And I just kind of like, you know, when you get to your 5 and 6, you're sort of aware of these other forces in the world. You know, I read a lot of Holocaust literature and then like Robert Cormier or dystopian, the Tomorrow books. But, you know, I kind of, but I was kind of excited that an adult would write for a child, a young adult, and appreciate that we were kind of aware of, you know, some of the stuff that goes on in the news or, you know, I didn't want everything sanitized. I definitely felt that towards like end of primary, early high school. I didn't want the sanitized version of the world. Like I wanted to sort of delve a bit further. Yeah, so
absolutely, Sarah. And I think I might be a bit older than you because those John Marsden books, they didn't really, that I wasn't aware of those, I don't think, at the right age. Then I've read the first two or three of those novels as an adult out of curiosity, and they're so good.
Are they still good? Yeah.
They're still good. They're still good, and we still recommend them to readers all the time. And I think, too, what is so great in there is that he doesn't underestimate kids at all. And he just shows these kids being able to do things that their parents never would suspect they were capable of. To me, that you love that at that age. That's just that's the best.
Yeah, they get to be sort of confident absolutely. And heroes and solving their own problems. I mean, so in 2024, one of the world's biggest authors, Sally Rooney, launched her fourth novel, Intermezzo. And to mark the milestone, you opened Glee Books Dulwich Hill just before midnight for book shopping, champagne, your Irish potato chips, cake, and then there was a midnight box opening. Yay. So is that one of the more memorable nights you've hosted, and what other crazy things have happened at the shop that I've missed?
Sarah, that was wild, and I kind of can't believe we did it now. And you were so fabulous turning up with your special cupcakes.
We had cupcakes.
With the book cover.
We did, but it was packed. Like I was kind of like, is this going to be a niche event? But I think you were at capacity. There were a lot of people in that shop.
Yeah, it's true, Sarah. It was sort of like, if we build it, will they come?
They came.
And look. Yeah, it was such a memorable evening. No, I don't think
anything. That was
we have got some of this month. I don't think we've topped that, and I'm not. You know, it's going to take a big book for us to top that again. I think the other thing that was the highlight of that night, Sarah, that you've missed is the red carpet. the red carpet, which was actually royal blue, the same color as the book. That was a really exciting moment for us when we unfurled
the blue carpet.
Yeah, that was such a great night. And were you there when we did readings from the normal people?
Yeah, that was that night. Yes, that was the other highlight. Yeah, that was that night.
That was so good. And oh gosh, I mean, you've got to love the reading community. Prepared to come out and arrive at a bookshop at 11:30 to be first in line for a book. It was so fantastic.
It was good. It was nice just to celebrate. Yeah, because, you know, people line up for tickets and movies. Yeah, it was nice to celebrate a big book event. Okay, well.
That booker's event is fantastic. We did do a sunrise opening. That's the closest thing in terms of this sort of thing. We did a sunrise opening for R.F. Kuang's Catabasis.
Oh, yes.
Earlier this year, and we served mimosas.
That's nice.
And that was, we didn't take RSVPs for that one. So my staff member Coco and I turned up very early and thought, will anybody show? And I tell you, our relief when we saw a little queue form at the door.
Oh.
Yeah. You got to love those book people who'll take something. But that was exciting. And and we've done lots of great things there. I mean, we set up a polling booth for locals, a huge like a electoral polling booth for people to vote for books they like. With this thing we do called, we've done it for a few years now, called Delhi Votes. And then we also have a Delhi Reads Day where all the locals come in. And you know those shelf talkers that we have in the store where you can recommend a book to other people? We just open it up to the public and the store gets swamped with reader recommendations. So we try to do,
I think that's what's
there's
nice about
people
your shop
like that.
because
Yeah.
you're on a main
Yes.
drag, and so people are wandering past and they're doing
Yeah.
and they just wander in, and yeah, very
Yeah.
well placed.
Yeah, it's there's really no end to the madness that you can come up
I feel
with.
like now I want to look up when Forever was published, and if they reissue it, I think maybe a Judy Blume, we need a Judy Blume event.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that. I remember reading I think it's a graphic novel, might have been called Marbles years ago, and in it this person, a very like the protagonist is a very sort of interesting creative person, and they have maybe it's a 30th or a 40th birthday, it's a big party, and someone gets up and does a reading from Forever, and they just read the sex scene in as part of
Awesome.
this big party, which I just thought was just inspired. So yeah, I don't know. And
We'll
who
have to
knows?
work
We're
on
always
something.
trying to think of things that we could possibly come up with at the bookshop. I'm open to all
All
suggestions.
suggestions. Okay, I'll
Absolutely. Yeah.
workshop that.
Yeah.
So, in
Absolutely.
addition to reading
Oh.
and selling books, you're also a talented pianist and singer. And I know this because you occasionally drop songs on Instagram. I don't know if it's on the official Dolly account or on another account.
Yes.
But you recently launched a new project called For Marilyn with Love. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah, well, I'm more of a singer than a pianist, though. I mean, I play piano, but I'm always sort of that's a bit of a side project I'm working on. But I have worked as a professional singer at different points in my life, and I was one of those dreadful all singing, all dancing children.
Were
And
you on Young Talent Time? No.
I did go to Young Talent Times School.
Oh,
That was
yes.
a thing. I would love to find another human who was sent to that Young Talent Times School. I don't
Was
know
that in
where it was.
Sydney? Was it in
Yeah,
Sydney?
it
Yes.
was in
Okay.
Sydney. And I'm sure it wasn't, but I think it felt like in my mind, it was 4 hours on a Saturday in four different classes. I'm sure it probably wasn't a full 4 hours, but
Sounds feasible.
that was quite an experience. And we'd have these awards nights, and some of the stars from Young Talent Time would turn
Courtney, Juanita.
up.
I was big into Courtney and Juanita.
Was
They were, yeah, Bevan.
Yeah. Oh God. Oh, hey, look at you, Sarah.
Oh
This is
yeah, I mean, I
revealing.
couldn't, yeah, I wasn't much of a singer or a dancer, so I was just a fan.
Do you remember the Solid Gold Dancers? What show was that? Are you old enough for that?
No.
That was another.
Oh.
I can't remember what that variety show was, but there was the Solid Gold. Anyway, gosh, it was a good time. It was a good time for variety television. That doesn't exist anymore.
Okay. Netflix and the streaming services kill that. We had no choice. I remember every Saturday night, if my parents were going out, we would just put on Hey Hey It's Saturday and get the babysitter. But that was our night in. And Hey Hey It's Saturday went for hours. It was more than 1 hour. It was a long show.
That's so true. I
We
think
had
it
no
lasted.
choice. You had the four channels, couldn't change. No
That's so
streaming.
good. However, look, the upside of that, I mean, I'm nostalgic, I think, by nature. But the upside of that, though, is that I liked when you would see someone and everybody had seen the same thing. So you
Yeah,
could talk
that was
about
fun.
it. That was
Yeah, there
an
were
aspect.
events. Yeah, and
There were events.
now it's like
Yeah.
that's why like I'm watching the tennis at the moment. But the big
Yeah.
sporting events are one of the few things that cut through. Like everyone will watch the
That's
cricket
so
or the
true.
tennis or the soccer World Cup. But yeah, in the olden times, it was like big team. People would stay up for the next episode of
Oh, that was so exciting.
Melrose Place. Remember?
Oh, yeah. And I was into Ally McBeal at the time, and
Oh
I
yes.
remember we'd get to uni and it would all be about what happened on Ally McBeal the night before.
That was, yeah.
But yeah, and those things. So yeah, they're
So your project though, is
yes,
it's gonna
sorry.
be
I digress. So I'm a Marilyn Monroe tragic, and it's hard to quite pinpoint how this came about. Two things I can remember from when I was little is that, and maybe little is 8 or so, is that somebody, and I think it might be my late uncle, gave me a Marilyn Monroe t-shirt. It's like this big, just a big, who knows where that came. It's probably something from the Royal Easter Show. Remember, you buy things like that at the
Was
Royal
it
Easter Show
oversized,
in
and
the
did you wear it
80s.
with
Oh, yes.
bike pants?
Oh, yeah. It was oversized. This is pre-bike pants. This is pre-bike pants. But I wore it from when it was oversized to when it wasn't oversized. So
That's
I
how
wore
good it
it
was.
for many years, and I think around the same time I saw Remember they would put on like film marathons on TV, and they must have put on like a Marilyn Monroe movie marathon. In my mind, it was 10 movies. It was probably two, but I remember somehow I'd managed to sneak out into the TV room and watch these Marilyn films into the wee hours of the night. And I was maybe 8 or 9.
Wearing your t-shirt, no
I'm
doubt.
not sure if I was wearing, I hope I was wearing the t-shirt. I don't know. So I don't know. I don't know what came first, but something, I don't, you know, these things that just lock in at that age and stay with you. And so I just became this big Marilyn fan. And then as I got older, then I realized how many books there were about Marilyn's life, and started probably as a teenager, then started reading some of those, and then just have stayed a bit of a Marilyn tragic for all these years. And I just find it sort of an endlessly fascinating time in history with that sort of early stardom. Yeah, I've just always found her just an endlessly interesting woman, and I suppose someone who was just so remarkable in her times. And then the more I've read, of course, of her upbringing, and her experience as a child, she, short version, she lived in the countless foster homes, orphanages. She had a mother who was not well and couldn't care for her properly, and so she moved from place to place to place, suffered abuse in those environments, you know, as you might expect could happen, but had this vision for herself that was something really unbelievable from that starting point, right, of being an actress. And I think she was discovered as a model, and then that one thing led to another. But what is interesting, I think, in that is that she, I think, so I suppose, is often seen as sort of a victim of the Hollywood system, and there are plenty of proper criticisms of that. And I think the casting couch situation that women experienced at that time was absolutely true. But at the same time, she was a self-made person in many, many respects, and had a vision for what that might look like, and was a student as well throughout her life. She was famously would turn up parties and party after party in her early career, always in the same dress, because she spent all whatever money she earned, she spent it on classes, on dancing, on acting, on singing, on the craft, and just rose to this incredible stardom. And I think was such a fabulous comic actress that people thought that's who she was. All the roles for women at that time were so limited, and so she did that Tweety blonde so well that people thought there was nothing more. But of course, that was the craft, and the craft is missed. I think over time,
Yeah, I think
I
just
think people.
because, yeah, I think I was, you know, to her time in the sun was, yeah, so far before mine. So, yeah, I didn't grow up with a lot of her vision, but I think my
Sure.
understanding of her is probably that a more stereotypical version of her. So, for Marilyn, with Love will be,
Give me
so,
what is no, no. So
what's the project?
So it's essentially a jazz slash cabaret musical project. So it's a show of sorts that I'm working on, which would be celebrating the life of Marilyn through the songs that she sang, and also through stories of her life, excerpts from journals and materials that I've been reading and come across, interviews with her. So I suppose a celebration of her, certainly not an impersonation, a celebration of her life. And I'm working with a fabulous jazz pianist, Monique Lysiak, on it. And it'll be with a jazz trio of all women, which is also a bit of a nod to Some Like It Hot. And also just my own personal opinion that we don't see enough women in jazz bands.
So
I keep
it's
going
on
to
the
gigs
stage.
and
It's
it's
going to be
all
on.
fellas. Yeah.
So it's going to be on. It's a stage
Yeah,
production.
yeah.
Yeah,
So
with
we've been
songs and a
working
bit
on
of biography
it.
stories. Oh, sounds amazing.
But yeah, I don't want to call it cabaret because they see something looser than that and more jazz based. But yeah, so I
And
work
so do we
on it.
know what timeline is this a?
My time, like my hope is to be, my hope is to have a few shows mid-year around what would be her 100th birthday, should she be alive. And you know, it's funny, Sarah, because that means that she was the same age as my late Nana. And if I'm very close to my Nana, and I saw all the photos of her over her life, and then I think of how Marilyn looked and presented herself, and it is wild. It is wildly, it's just,
Different worlds.
oh my gosh. I mean, just she, yeah, it was so Such a singular person and unique in her time. So the show will explore some of those things that people may not know about her. I mean, she was so unhappy with the films that she was being offered in that period of time that she left Hollywood at the height of her career. She quit Hollywood. She broke her contracts. She signed up to study at the Actors Studio in New York, and she moved to New York. And she didn't even live in a like a fancy place of her own. She stayed with someone. A photographer, Milton Green, and his family home with his wife at upstate New York. And she, slept into New York and went to class and then started a film production company. And I think she's the first woman who ever did that. So she's this extraordinary, interesting
Brilliant.
things about her
Oh,
life.
I can't. That sounds amazing. I can't wait to come because I'm going to learn so much. And so, do you know, we have a host. Do you know where it's going to go on? Do we have a venue
I've got a few. I've
to
got a
be
few.
released?
Yeah, to be really, yeah. But there's a few venues around Sydney's inner west which would be perfect. So yeah, but I mean, the workshopping phase, which is a nice process, and it's interesting too, Sarah, because I look back and I sort of think now when I think about when I became a bit hooked on Marilyn, then this project is really 40 years in the making. So
Yeah, it's
it's
going to
sort
be
of
so
nice,
good. But
yeah.
yeah, I love your connection to her story. Yeah, and then how you've learned more about her as a person and artist. And then
Interesting.
just some people you just are fascinated by.
Aren't you?
And
Yeah. And I think too, what is so interesting is the idea of that public and private self, which we all have. I mean, in someone like her, that's really writ large, obviously, that's extreme, that you've got someone who looked like that and have that lifestyle and yet was quite like to be alone, to read books, could be quite. A shy person privately. It's very interesting. And I
And then
think
had this
that,
public persona
yeah,
of
I think
this,
that's so interesting. And it can, and it, I mean, that's an interesting context that continues for all of us, I think, the public and private self.
that is interesting to unpack. I have a little street library out the front of my house, and we'd already set up this interview, and this book popped in. Oh, I don't know if it's going to show. This book,
No way. I
do you
can
know
only
this
see half
book?
that, but I know it's my week with Marilyn. I know all of
Yes.
that.
Do you have you read it? Have you read this book?
I have read some of that book, and I put it down because I didn't love some of the things that the author had to say
It's
about his
yeah,
text.
because he's
He was
this
a
so
very
this
young man, and I think
yeah.
that it reflects he.
It's his
Yeah,
viewpoint very much. Yes. So I didn't I was like at first I was like, this is a sign.
Yeah, it is a sign, Sarah. It's absolutely a sign. And I think,
I'm gonna.
I'm perhaps
That's the.
for the average punter, that's probably a very interesting Marilyn book. But I've read too many
You
Marilyn.
know, too, you know too much. Yeah, because I saw it, and I'll tell just for the listeners. So
Please.
the story is, it's My Week with Marilyn by Colin Clark, and he's a 23-year-old fresh from Oxford, it says, and then he's hired as a gopher on the set of The Prince and the Showgirl.
Yes.
Stars Marilyn with Laurence
That's
Olivier.
Olivier.
And I love this is a little blurb. It says, for one glorious week, the world's biggest film star sought comfort in the arms of the set's most junior employee. This is the frank, fresh, and comic story of how Clark came to share Monroe's confidences and her bed. I was like, oh, I wonder if this is useful for Letitia. And then I saw, yeah, there was actually, I think it's a spin-off book. Michelle Williams played her in the movie, but
Yes.
it's got some beautiful black and white pictures in it. But
Yeah.
okay,
No,
I'm
no, no,
glad
no.
you have seen
No, it
it.
does. It does. I don't mean to. That's terrible. I sound like I'm book
No,
busting.
no, no,
But
no.
it's just.
I was like, is this a good thing or a bad thing? I didn't know what it was, so I wanted to talk to you
Definitely
about
a sign,
it.
Sarah. And this is, it's interesting because there is just sort of I have found the more people I've mentioned this project to, the more Marilyn fans there are out there. And these are not just all the gay men that I'm friendly with.
We went to see Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill,
Oh,
which is
fantastic.
basically a biopic of Billie Holiday. But it was exactly as you described, a mixture of the songs and the stories of her life. And it was amazing because we got these special tickets where they had the regular audience seat, and then they had cabaret style, tables on the stage. So we're actually on the
Great.
stage, so it felt like we were in the live audience. But yeah,
Oh.
it was a brilliant production. So yeah,
Oh,
I'm
that's
imagining
lovely.
kind of similar thoughts. Amazing. Okay, well, we wish you luck on
Thank
Are
you.
you still writing the song? Are you still writing? Or
Yeah,
are you
I'm
practicing?
still very much after the busy Christmas, bookshop Christmas, I'm getting stuck into it. I had a good sort of workshop rehearsal with the pianist last week, and we're going to meet again next week. So no, it's in workshop stage, which is nice. That's a nice time
That's
too to sort of
Well, you know you're going
explore.
somewhere and you're working on the material. Yeah, well, keep us posted. I know you've got an Instagram account on it, but keep us posted so that we can all follow along. So we're coming to the end of our chat, but we normally finish with book recommendations. So I'm going to ask what you're reading now or another book you read recently that you'd recommend. But before we start, I just finished. This is an old rec. You recommended Catching the Light by Joanna Horton to me, and I've just finished it and I loved it.
Wasn't it
Yeah,
great?
it was so good. I'm still working on my posts, but amazing story of mother and daughter who get caught up in this New Zealand art commune, but beautifully written and really explores, this sort of that conversation around the male gaze in art, especially on the female form. But beautiful language and just very, and it defied stereotype. That was what I loved about it. It was nuanced and provocative, but it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go. Yeah, but you always, I don't know, you always pick good books for me. It's part of your skill as a bookseller, but you do. You've done, and the other one was Girl in the Pink Dress, which I love by Kylie Needham. And I think they're quite good comparator. Like, so I've read both of them. I love both of them. But if you loved Kylie Needham's book, I think you'll enjoy Catching the Light. So, yeah.
And yeah, well, both of those books are so wonderful too because they do concern themselves with art.
And the art
Which
world. And
I do like a book with an art world setting, and I know
yes.
that you do too.
Yes, and also because I mean I think as a writer we have a tendency to romanticize and glorify art, but human failings are in the art world too, and and even more sometimes. That's what I like too, because we all look at this amazing art and think, oh, the person who made this must be, well, they are exceptional and amazing, but they're also flawed human beings. They're human beings
Absolutely.
just like the rest of us, and that comes out in both of those books. So
Absolutely.
and just circling back, I was kind of like you. I'm quite an independent reader and I just sort of go with what I want to feel or pull books off the shelf, but I do ask people for their recommendations, but sometimes people recommend books and I start reading it and like, this is not the book for me, but then I have trusted voices, and you definitely know my vibe now, so I'm going to listen to your
Oh, that's
to
good.
your rec, so
Oh,
feel
that's so
free to
good. That's
like
good.
hand me off.
Yeah. Look, I always encourage people to put down books that they don't like. That
I
life
used to
is
have
too
this thing, like I
short.
had to finish, and then I understood the consensus from the industry is you don't, life is too short, and
I
there's
know.
nothing worse than kind of waiting through a
Yeah.
book that you've just checked out
Yeah.
of.
Me too sometimes. I see it like no judgment. It's just not for me. Someone else could just it could just be perfect, but it's not for just not for me.
Yeah, and sometimes you're not in the frame of mind. It's like I was talking before. Sometimes I'm in a serious mood, sometimes in a holiday mood, and sometimes it's not the book, it's me. It's like I'm not in the right
Absolutely.
mood to read.
I'm always astounded by people who have an idea that they're going to read this book next, and then that one, and then that one. Because for me, each book sort of suggests the next.
I
I
want to
either
follow
want to.
that, or I want to leave that
Yeah, yeah,
behind.
yeah. So I feel like it's hard to plan. It's hard to plan too many books ahead. And I even like, as a bookseller, you receive advanced reading copies or proofs of books before they come out. And so I will sometimes come home. I'll sit on the lounge with a pile of proofs. And what I love to do is not even read the back. I just open them
Page
up
one.
and just see read page one. And I tend to find if the writing speaks to me, I don't even need the blurb. I don't even need to know what happens in it because if I like, you get that feeling from the first few pages, and that's really how I choose books more than what is said on the back. And before I worked as a bookseller, I used to just open them up and read the first couple of pages, and you get a feeling pretty quickly about where they're
Same. Yeah,
right
that's how I do
for
it.
you. So I like to do that, and also sometimes there's a lot of spoilers on the back of books. More than you read, I can't believe they gave that away. So I like to not. I don't like. Some people love to really research their reading, but I like to just sort of dive
Go in a
and
bit
just
blind.
see. But you've got to be. You can only do that if you're a quitter. You have to be a quitter, and I'm a quitter of books if I don't like. But if you're not a quitter, then you have to research and get the right
Yeah,
book.
because
Otherwise,
it's a serious investment of your
hours of
time.
your life reading books you don't like is not what you need. But
All
I've
right.
yeah. What
What were
about
your last books that you
you?
haven't quit?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've read a couple of fantastic Australian books so far this year. I read a book called In a Common Hour by Sita Walker.
Oh, I've seen that. I've seen the
Yes.
cover. I haven't read it. Wow.
Yes. She is a Brisbane writer. She did have a, she has written a memoir before, but this is her debut novel. And it is just fantastic. I've got this subgenre that I love, Sarah, and it's sort of literature that also has mystery in it. Not a crime book, but literature that has that real sense of mystery in it. And I think you probably like that too. And In a Common Hour, the contemporary storyline all unfolds in 1 hour in an Australian high school. And it starts in the classroom of everyone's sort of favorite English teacher. Of course, it's the English teacher. He's the cool teacher. People like him. And he's the kind of teacher who is off curriculum sometimes and will read the kids a poem and do these sorts of things. Anyway, he starts reading the students a poem and he becomes emotional and he starts to unravel in the classroom. And the kids are like, Sir, what's going on? And then a student who's a bit of an unknown quantity, has a bit of a crack at him, and very uncharacteristically, this teacher says something eviscerating to that student. And then the student seeks revenge and he has something on the teacher from a previous school. And so the story begins. And then it all unfolds in an hour with flashbacks. Fabulous. Really, really fantastic
Wow.
new read.
Just the challenge of writing a whole novel in an hour
Yeah,
with such a
yeah.
short, oh, I'm
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
I'm going to
does go
utilize the
back in time at
okay.
points, but then the current is,
The
yeah,
current
great.
timeline.
Yeah, great. And it all moves different perspectives, a school principal, school teacher, different students in the school. Really, really great. Highly
Oh,
recommend.
okay, we'll put that in the notes.
Highly recommend.
Excellent.
And the other one is a shorter novel. And do you love a novel that's quite
Oh,
short
love
and
a
brilliant?
novella.
Me too. Yeah, it is longer than a novella, but it is a shorter, brilliant novel. It's by Deborah Adelaide, the Australian, yeah, author and also academic. And it's called When I Am 64. It comes out in April and it's nonfiction. It's concerned in the main with her friendship with the writer Gabrielle Carey. And it's an extraordinary exploration of friendship, of living a creative life, all of the torment and torture that goes with being a writer. And it's just extraordinary. The you know when a book just has the strongest voice. Completely compelling. I couldn't put it down, and I won't say too much.
Gabrielle Carey
Yes, the
co-wrote
writer.
Jubilee, Jubilee
Yes,
Blues, of
Kathy
the
Lett.
Jubilee
Yes, and
Blues.
many other
Yes.
things. And who passed away at 64, the same age her father was when he took his own life. And it centers mainly on the last sort of year of Gabrielle's life and Deborah's friendship during that time when Gabrielle was in a very debilitating depression and just extraordinary friendship and just yeah a fabulous
Oh,
wonderfully moving book and such an interesting and funny too as so many things about death and sadness can be cathartic and there's so much humor in there as well
Oh.
the wit and yeah it's just
Oh, that sounds
extraordinary
beautiful.
so I recommend that and can I slip one more in because I'm a
Yes,
fellow and I
yes.
always love one of my favorite reads of last year was Tenderfoot by Toni Jordan
Tell us about that.
that is set in the mid 70s, 70, yeah, 70s in Brisbane. And it's told from the perspective of a 12 or 13-year-old girl. And she's very bright and she's in a very tricky family situation. And it's all told, yeah, from her perspective. And it is just one of those books that feels like a sort of instant Australian classic.
Classic.
It's so convincingly the perspective of a young person seeing a tricky situation and who you can trust as an adult and who you can't. And again, there's a lovely feeling of suspense throughout. And sometimes you're expecting the worst, but then you're surprised that maybe that a person, even a dodgy person, can do the right thing and vice versa, and a good person can do a dodgy thing. But
Oh, that's
yeah, a really, really extraordinary book. I mean, Toni's written a lot of books, but I think this is just her masterpiece.
amazing. Okay. Well, my TBR
Yeah,
just got
yes.
longer and longer.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your generous recommendations and the chat and sharing your experiences. And we're so excited about your own creative projects and also any book events coming up at the shop. I'm just going to keep an eye on as well because
Absolutely. Well, yes. Yeah, so do be sure, listeners, to follow us
yes.
on Instagram. And we always, yeah, you'll see whatever's happening in the store. It's gleebooks_Dulwich. And we do fantastic events in collaboration with Goldie's Cafe Restaurant. So, yes.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah. Thanks, Letitia. We'll chat soon. Catch up soon.
Thank you so much, Sarah. What a pleasure.